Well, the Mennonites of Canada have been in an uproar these past 2 weeks. You're chuckling knowingly. It's all thanks to the CBC. We're used to being misunderstood as a people group, of course, due to the varying degrees of visibility of being Mennonite, and also historical patterns that have made communities more insular. And we're no strangers to being misrepresented. When one of my Frisbee teammates a couple of years ago asked us if we knew that NHL player Jonathan Taves was part of a religious cult, I gently corrected him. But splash Mennonites on the big or small screen, and we just know that hardly anyone's going to take the time to get it right. The CBC show Pure started airing 2 Mondays ago, and if you've managed to miss the Mennonite media storm about it, the brief synopsis is that Pure is the story of Noah Funk, a newly elected Mennonite pastor in an ambiguously more conservative group, who is determined to rid his community of drug traffickers. But Noah's actions trigger an ultimatum from Menno mob leader Eli Voss. Exciting. The Mennonite Breaking Bad, some are saying. I don't know who's saying that, but some. And the notion behind the story has some truth in issues that affect Old Colony Mennonites in Ontario and people within their community who go back and forth to Mexico. But the show is so unresearched in terms of culture and theology that some people are just laughing at it, and others are indignant that CBC would contribute to such miseducation. The average non-Mennonite might raise an eyebrow about the things that many blogging Mennonites have as bees in their bonnets, pun intended. That average non-Anabaptist soul might not care that the supposed Mennonites in Pure have been given an impure mashup of clothing, vehicles, and traditions from Old Colony Mennonites, Old Order Mennonites, and even Amish. Plus some practices that don't belong at all, and nobody's really sure about their accents. Maybe buggies, bonnets, and beards seem pretty frivolous to care about when the larger issues are drug culture and violence, which various stripes of Mennonites can't claim to be entirely immune to. But lots of people are writing about those buggies, bonnets, and beards and trying to set the record straight. Or maybe using those obvious mistakes to remind people not to believe everything they see on TV. To continue my sermon from last Sunday, it seems that we know who our people are, and we know who our people aren't. We know the lines that divide us into very different groups, whether those lines are bonnet ribbons or buggy tracks. I remember being with a friend and her grandmother, and we went to visit another grandmotherly sort who showed us some pictures. My friend and I just saw women quilting with heads covered like our Amish grandmothers. But Grandma Frida leaned closer to look at the lace and ribbons and said, "Now what kind of people are those?" And our host knew exactly what she meant, and she said, "They're brethren in Christ." These subtle distinctions have been, in many generations, like dialects of the same language. Yes, we're all Anabaptist, but I'm not that kind of Anabaptist. I'm not that kind of Mennonite, as one blogger wrote this week as she reflected on Pure. There are many different dialects of being Mennonite, even if the rest of the world just thinks we're all speaking the same language. And I guess that's how I was thinking about Pure in light of the Tower of Babel this week. This story that many members of Mennonite World Conference will reflect on today. The Tower of Babel has often been told as a story of humanity seeking their own glory and God destroying their plans and essentially cursing them with confusion and the inability to understand each other. They went from one language to many languages. But Swiss Mennonite Jörg Breker suggests that God heard the cry of the people for unity and understanding and blessed them in a completely unexpected way. Instead of uniformity, God gave humanity the gift of diversity, knowing, of course, that this was a richer way to build a society. Breaker suggests that God wanted the people to learn to value diversity. But after that blessing, the people are scattered over the face of the earth. The text says that God did the scattering, but it's a story that was created to help understand the world. We can do a little midrash on the details, a little added commentary. So God says to, I'm not sure who, let's go down and confuse their languages, their language. The Hebrew word that is translated as confuse is most often used in the Bible to mean to mix, like flour and oil, to make bread, as for many offerings described in the book of Numbers. It's interesting that the image is of God blending the people's languages as if they are distinct ingredients that can come together in one recipe. But the result is that the people are scattered. If God created diversity as a gift that humanity needs, why does that diversity push us away from each other? Why do we scatter when we need to find new ways to communicate? I understand that we hold our national broadcaster to a high standard, and that we'd like to be able to trust that they do careful research in order to keep their mandate to inform, enlighten, and entertain, to contribute to the development of a shared national consciousness and identity, and to reflect the regional and cultural diversity of Canada. And some folks have pointed out that more isolated Mennonite groups can be quite vulnerable to public ignorance and don't have many ways to advocate for themselves. But how much of the Mennonite upset this week was about keeping all of our differences straight because it's very important to be clear on how scattered we are? In an HMC Facebook discussion, Matt Frey suggested that the show makes some of us uncomfortable on one hand because it muddies the water about exactly what family line these worldly unfaithful people are a part of. How can we start a schism to separate ourselves from all these unrepentant sinners if we can't even get their headwear sorted out? Much like Abraham and Sarah in last week's sermon, there are walls that we like to keep clear so we know who we are not. We speak a different language, so we can't stay together. We still see this right now. I was just in Pennsylvania, where I talked to lots of folks who are part of congregations from Lancaster Mennonite Conference. That conference has decided that they speak a different language than the rest of MCUSA when it comes to LGBTQ justice and faith and biblical interpretation. So they scatter. Lancaster has pulled out of MCUSA. Most of the people I talked with at Laurelville are in churches who have pulled out of Lancaster Conference to join conferences that are still part of MCUSA. And here in Canada, I don't know what's going to happen to Mennonite Church British Columbia. We just keep running into a confusion of our language, and instead of receiving it as what we need from God, even as a gift, we scatter from each other. Not that overcoming our shared confusion is necessarily easy. And there are matters of justice involved in that too. Today we celebrate being part of an Anabaptist family that is a lot more diverse than the groups that get mixed up and confused on CBC. Because we're literally scattered over the face of the earth, we don't always encounter it head on. But being Mennonite means 1,000 different things. Or maybe it means 2.1 million different things. That's the MWC membership number. Or maybe it means just one thing. We're family. A family of faith that gathers around shared convictions. And maybe we struggle with those convictions in different ways from each other, or we live them out in different ways in different places. But still, a family of faith that does our best to learn to communicate with each other. And that's the beautiful image from the day of Pentecost. It wasn't a day where everyone spoke one language again. It was a day when everyone heard their own language being spoken. People understood and were understood. It was a day when the conversation was about one thing, God's deeds of power. And God's Spirit empowered the community in its diversity to spread that good news. We read that about 3,000 of that multilingual crowd were baptized that day. But that diversity wasn't going to suddenly be easy. Jörg Brecker writes that this new community must search for new ways of living together. After Pentecost, the people in Jerusalem opened their homes and shared with those who wanted to belong. This new life came from the Spirit of Jesus. This soon led to conflicts in the early church, but they stayed on the path, journeying together. And we will have our challenges today, too. If not, I wouldn't be leaving today for a pastor's week at AMBS on the theme of cultivating intercultural leadership. Brecker goes on to challenge us as a global church that the vague idea of a common humanity will not be enough to inspire us about a common future. We need the Spirit of Pentecost and of the open houses in Jerusalem and the international community of the early church. He writes, "In order to discover a new growing community where the needs of one are not dictated by another, we must move beyond the fears of losing our protection. This happens when the Spirit of God enters and fills our languages, cultures, and lifestyles with the life of Jesus, celebrating and illuminating our differences and unifying them in the community beyond what we can imagine." One story from the Anabaptists of Europe. The Mennonite Brethren Church in Neuwied, Germany, has been characterized by integrating people from different cultural backgrounds from the beginning, after World War II. And Pastor Walter Jakobiet writes, "A completely new chapter of church life began about 8 years ago, when we had the courage to open our doors to people with a completely different religious background. Community leaders from our city came to us with the request, would we be willing to open a youth club and help the city take care of young people 12 to 17 years of age with an immigrant background? Looking back, we know we were very naive at the time. Nevertheless, we were faithful when we said yes to obey God's command to seek the peace and prosperity of the city. And so this youth club, 30 young people from Muslim and Yazidi background, found a home in our church building. We quickly realized that these young people took it for granted that they could attend their meeting place at any time. When the doors opened, they entered, whether it was to a ladies' meeting, a prayer time, or another event. When they found the doors locked, they would simply sit on the steps in front of the entrance and hang out there, not caring if it was day or night. The first 3 months this youth club opened were really stressful for the church. We only survived this time with much prayer, patience, discussions, and by setting up some rules and consequences for the youth. To our surprise, the relationship with the young people got better in the coming months. In our church, the young people experienced something they had not received so far: appreciation, respect, and Christian charity. The leaders of the city were amazed to see the behavior of these young people change in a positive way." Because of the experience with the youth group, Pastor Walter writes that the church was prepared to welcome refugees and asylum seekers more recently now. He writes one beautiful story about baptizing a new believer from Iran after a Farsi Bible study group that they had set up. And he also reflects, "Meanwhile, we have learned that it's a blessing that our typical German characteristics, such as punctuality and order, are being supplemented with characteristics from other countries, such as spontaneity and hospitality. Though hospitality is supposed to be a special trademark for Christians, we are learning a lot about it from people from an Eastern background. They always seem to have time to talk and enjoy a cup of tea while having fellowship. Their doors and tables are always open for guests. Investing in strangers takes courage, because in doing so, we leave our well-known comfort zone. But what we learn living this way is indescribable. The encounters with my new friends from around the world has changed my life so positively that I cannot imagine what it was like when they were not yet a part of my life." I've touched on a lot of different kinds of diversity today. Diversity within the North American Mennonite Church, across the global Anabaptist family, and amongst others who share our neighborhoods with us, including immigrants and refugees, those of us who come from all kinds of places. Each of these forms of diversity will play out differently and with different challenges. But I trust that God hears our cries, as the psalmist said, as we seek to find new ways of living together as our communities shift and grow. Let's ask each other what it means not to scatter from one another, and what it means to speak each other's cultural, emotional, and spiritual languages. What it means to speak or act or live so that others are aware of the power of God.